Making After School Cool.
Welcome to the Making After School Cool podcast, the link between research, practice, and theory for those who are interested in the activities youth are engaged in during non-school hours. The Making After School Cool podcast is produced by Case for Kids, the division of Harris County Department of Education. And I'm your host, Mike Wilson. During our present time period, which can be described as the age of social unrest while experiencing a pandemic, it is quite normal for people to search for answers and explanations. However, when the answers and explanations are given to you by sources which may not be trustworthy, then the results can be problematic. Therefore, the topic for today's episode of the Making After School Cool podcast is strategies for recognizing conspiracy theories and misinformation. According to Dr. Edwin Hodge, a psychologist at the University of Victoria, conspiracy theories are born from any event that generates massive social change. For example, the assassination of a popular U.S. president, the September 11 terrorist attacks, or shutdowns and quarantines caused by the coronavirus. Hodge emphasized that believing in a conspiracy theory does not make you inherently bad. He states there is a spectrum. On one end, there are nonviolent people who are simply scared, things don't make sense anymore, and they feel distrust of new societal norms and governmental policies. Thus, everything can be answered by outlandish theories. On the other end of the spectrum are people who are so deeply believe in the exaggerated claims that they commit to the conspiracy to the point where their actions have turned violent, hate-filled, and racist. So what can we do to recognize conspiracy theories and misinformation? That is the question I pose to our guest, Mr. John Silva. John Silva is the News Literacy Project Senior Director of Education and Training. He joined NLP after a 13-year career as a middle and high school social studies teacher with Chicago Public Schools. Prior to becoming a teacher, John was in the U.S. Marine Corps, after which he spent several years in corporate telecommunications. Hi, John. Welcome to the Making After School Cool podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thanks. Very happy to be joining you today.
Well, thanks for taking time to be with us. So, you're the Senior Director of Education and Training for the News Literacy Project. For our listeners who are not familiar with this organization, can you explain the purpose of NLP and your responsibilities with them?
Sure. The News Literacy Project is a national, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. We actually just celebrated our 13th year of being in existence. And our primary role is to develop resources and professional development and other support to educators who want to teach news literacy, which is broadly how do we teach young people how to sort fact from fiction in this overwhelming information landscape that they are inheriting, and how to know what to trust and how to be reliably informed.
So presently, the phrase misinformation and conspiracy theories have become common terms in the news and social media. Are there differences between these two terms? And if so, can you explain the difference?
Yes, there are some very important differences. So misinformation is a term that broadly refers to false information. And misinformation can take on many different forms. It could be something that's a hoax or a false rumor, or even in more extreme cases can be related to propaganda and actual disinformation, you know, deliberate false information. Conspiracy theories have misinformation as part of the belief, but a conspiracy theory in general is an idea that for some major event, there is an alternative explanation that places the blame on some powerful person or organization, usually with some sinister intent and often sort of secretive behind the scenes work. So, you know, one classic example is every year people on the anniversary of the moon landing, the conspiracy theory that somehow, you know, we didn't actually put astronauts on the moon, that it was faked in a movie studio and it was done by the government. And it's this idea that they're trying to deceive us and keep us from believing that that's actually happened. And, you know, there's a lot of different variations from that, but it's generally this false belief that's trying to have this alternative explanation that has no basis in fact.
So in your opinion, why do you believe people are so passionate in accepting conspiracy theories of misinformation?
Well, I think there's a couple things that go into that. And it sort of falls into two broad categories. One relates to what we call institutional cynicism, right? This innate distrust of governments and large institutions, and this idea that you can't trust anything that, for example, the government does. And so when you have a deep level of institutional cynicism, you are more likely to readily accept the idea that they could be doing something dangerous or even deadly, right? The other aspect of that has to do with fears and anxieties and stresses, right? We actually see a lot of that related to conspiracy theories, most recently relating to the COVID-19 pandemic. We see it with a lot of anti-vaccine conspiracy theories, right? People are fearful, they have a lot of anxiety about what's going on. And some of it's scary. Like, we don't want to believe that this global pandemic just occurred naturally. That's a terrifying idea. And so it's actually, for some people, more comforting to believe this false idea that it wasn't a naturally occurring virus. It was actually man-made in a lab and released deliberately, and in some cases, blaming that it's being spread by 5G networks and worse, right? It's more comforting for us to soothe our anxieties to be able to pinpoint a clear cause as opposed to the uncertainty of the science.
Do you think that people who tend to get caught up into conspiracy theories fall into a particular demographic group, a particular age group, or does it just vary based on person to person?
It kind of depends on which conspiracy theory, which type of conspiracy theory that we're talking about. The short answer is there isn't, anyone can be susceptible to conspiratorial thinking, given the right set of circumstances. We don't want, most of us don't want to believe that we would fall victim to it, but when we're talking about emotional manipulation, taking advantage of fears and anxieties, we can be very susceptible to it. That being said, there are some groups that we can, we can see clear explanations for it. So, for example, there's a good amount of what we call vaccine hesitancy in the African American community, for example. Because there is actually you can point to a clear history of things like, for example, the Tuskegee experiments. That leads to what I mentioned, that sort of institutional cynicism, that distrust of the government. So if the government comes along and says, hey, we're gonna give you this vaccine, based on that past, real history, there is a lot of distrust there. And in that distrust, anti-vaccine conspiracy theorists can exploit that and actually sort of manipulate them into being even more anti-vaccine. So there are some things that have have really happened in history that we could almost classify as real conspiracies that lead to that distrust. And in that distrust, the conspiracy theorists interject, and that's how people can be manipulated.
I recently attended a webinar where you talked about falling into a rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what is the rabbit hole theory?
So the rabbit hole is the sort of common term that we use to describe falling down a pathway of conspiratorial thinking. So if you think about it in terms of a pathway, in the sense that once you start to believe one aspect of a conspiracy theory, there are some cognitive biases that start to come into play, that basically the belief starts to short circuit your critical thinking, and you start down a pathway where all of the things that you are doing are designed to reinforce a belief as opposed to trying to verify what's true. What part of that is what we call motivated reasoning. If I believe X to be true, I'm going to continually search for information that will reinforce that belief, and I will reject anything that contradicts it, because I've internalized that belief. That belief gives me some comfort for whatever it is I'm trying to do. And so it's a rejection. It doesn't matter how factual that contradictory evidence is. If it doesn't comport with what I believe, I'm going to reject it. Or I'm even going to find a way to take that and twist it and find a way to make it support what I already believe. So that rabbit hole is this idea that you're down a pathway and there's really only one way out, which is to turn around and try to go back up. And the deeper you go, the more those cognitive biases come into play.
You know, it's interesting because we live in this age of technology and social media. And I know sometimes, you know, people use the internet as their main source for researching things. And depending on your search history, what you pull up, then other articles or other documentations based on your previous search will come up. So it's easy to fall into that rabbit hole when the only source of information you get seems to be supporting previous things that you've read. And speaking of social media, this form of technology is a significant influence in many youth's lives, which can be challenging for them to know which sources are accurate and which sources are false. So us being educators and after school professionals, how can we inform youth on how to recognize suspicious information?
That's actually one of the most important things that we're trying to do through our work. And you know, especially with my work in doing professional development for educators. So one of the first things that I always try to emphasize is that we need to teach young people how to recognize their emotional reactions to information. That's one of the key aspects of misinformation broadly, but also conspiracy theories, is that they are trying to manipulate us through our emotions into a belief. And we're having an emotional response to this information. So that's one of the first steps, is recognizing emotional response as that mechanism for being manipulated. Connected to that, we need to sort of approach two really important skill sets. One is fact checking, right? We need to teach young people how to verify information for themselves, right? We need to teach what's called lateral reading, which is a method of deliberately searching for information. It's developed by Sam Weinberg and Sarah McGrew at the Graduate School of Education, Stanford Graduate School of Education. It's the idea that when you're confronted with something, get off of that page, get off of that thing, open up a new browser tab and start searching for information, start searching the details, search for information about the source, see what you can verify from other sources. And so fact-checking is a really important set of skills that way. The other aspect of that, which is equally important, is what we call logic checking. Because there may be times when you're confronted with something and the details of it may be factual, but the logic behind it is not. So one example, there's a very common meme that goes around with some of the COVID-19 conspiracies, right? And there's one map that shows COVID-19 hotspots. So you see the map of the United States, all these hotspots around the country. And then they show a second map, which is 5G networks, right? And when you look at those two maps together, you see that they are very similar. And so people say, well, look, see here, here's proof that 5G causes COVID-19. So if you fact check those two maps, you'll find that they are accurate, they're factual maps. But what you have to then do is evaluate how those two maps support the claim. So logic checking is, so these people are claiming this, here's what they're saying as evidence. You have to be able to evaluate that argument in that sense. So we need to teach about logical fallacies, you know, things like correlation doesn't equal causation, the post hoc fallacy, just because one thing happened after the other doesn't mean that first thing caused the second, right? So young people need to recognize the emotional manipulation and then find a way to sort of push down the emotion and then go through some very deliberate critical thinking steps. So that's one of the things that we're trying to emphasize, is that we need to be teaching how to do critical thinking in a more deliberate way.
How do you think adults and educators can introduce fact-checking and logic-checking, which may counter a conspiracy theory, especially when their parents, the student's parents, believe the theory to be true?
Yeah, this is one of the most difficult challenges, especially when we're talking about conspiratorial beliefs, but also sort of very strong political, social, cultural beliefs that may be susceptible to misinformation, and that, you know, our beliefs are formed in so many ways through our upbringing, through family and friends. And so it can be very difficult for a young person to start to discover that things that they have been taught may not be true. So the challenge is finding a way to first teach young people how to verify information for themselves. And then, so this also goes to sort of the bigger issue of how do we talk to people in general about conspiracy theories, is that we need to also talk to young people and everyone about how to approach conversations about these beliefs, because most of us are finding ourselves in conflict and we want to avoid that. So we want to find some ways to talk about that with young people, but it's a major challenge, I think, right now in particular, because so many young people are learning at home. They don't have the advantage previously of being in a classroom where it's a more academic environment and we can talk about it from an academic perspective. So it's a major challenge, and it's an uncomfortable place, I think, for a lot of young people. But fortunately, you know, teenagers, there's a couple things that happens with them, is that they get to be more curious about the world. They want to know for themselves. And, you know, as they are starting to find their own identities, you know, there is sort of a natural process where they may find themselves being more empowered to, you know, have those differing opinions from their parents. So it's really important as educators that we give them the tools to be able to sort of verify for themselves, not just accept things at face value because an adult in their life sort of has taught them that.
I was actually introduced to the News Literacy Project from a colleague. And, you know, as I started visiting the page, I found a wealth of information and resources that definitely helps to clarify some things. In fact, I did the Checkology, and some of the questions that popped up in regards to, you know, if you saw this or you see, you know, this image, what does it make you believe? And some of those images I actually had seen either on the news or on somebody's website. And depending on what had just occurred, you know, it kind of puts you in a mindset that this can actually be true. For people who aren't aware, what resources are available that can help parents, adults, anybody who is just, you know, interested in what exactly is the truth that are available on the News Literacy mm-hmm. Project?
Right. So if you go to newslit.org, you will see on the navigation of our website that we have a number of resources that are specifically for educators, because that's part of our primary mission. But we have been developing more and more resources for the general public. And it's under what we call the For Everyone tab. And so there are a couple things that we do. So on our social media channels, we regularly share tips and tricks and little tutorials about different things. We talk about misinformation. We talk about manipulation. We're starting to talk more about conspiracy theories. So there are a number of things that are there for adults to kind of go through on their own and to learn some things just a little bit at a time. The Checkology Virtual Classroom, which is our main learning platform for teaching news literacy for educators, we also have a version of Checkology now for the general public. So if adults want to go through some of these things on their own, they can do that. We also have an app called Informable. It's available on the Google Play Store or on iTunes. It is a brain training style app that sort of teaches and reinforces some key news literacy skills, such as recognizing the difference between news and opinion, whether or not something is supported by evidence. You know, that goes back to that logic checking skill. So there's a number of resources out there, and you know, we're continually developing more. And we're starting to do more work with other organizations trying to reach out to talk to the public about news literacy and how to be reliably informed.
Well, I'll certainly spread the word. In fact, that's why I really and truly appreciate you being our guest today. I think this is a very important topic, and we're in this time period where there's just so much stuff that's being thrown at us, and we have access to so much stuff. I mean, it's interesting, the term fact check now is a part of our local news almost every evening. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely just want to thank you for joining us for this episode of the Making After School Cool podcast, and for sharing your wealth and knowledge, and definitely keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Very happy to have been able to talk to you today.
And I'll probably follow up, because I don't believe any of this is going to end anytime soon. So, hopefully in the future, we'll be able to touch base again.
Absolutely. And we would love to connect with any of your educators in Harris County to try to help bring some resources. All of the resources from the News Literacy Project are completely free.
Awesome.
So we'd be happy to work with your educators and to try to help bring more resources to the classroom.
Thank you.
Making
After School Cool. Today's episode focused on strategies to address conspiracy theories and misinformation. As always, I want to thank our listeners for joining us for this podcast. Please join us for future podcasts as we continue to explore issues relevant to the needs of the out-of-school time travel.